You're listening to Radio Berkman from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. You can find show notes for this episode and more programs like this at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman.
Did you hear the news? I'm going to make records.
No kidding!
The online collaborative encyclopedia Wikipedia serves over 12 billion individual page views every month, and in spite of how open and accessible Wikipedia is to edit, very few people actually participate as writers and editors relative to the number of visits. At the beginning of this month, the Wikimedia Foundation, which raises funds for Wikipedia and its sister initiatives, took a dramatic approach to their annual fundraising campaign. Just head over to any article on Wikipedia and you'll see a banner ad featuring the face of Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia, and an appeal for funds. The banner ads have taken many Wikipedia users by surprise. Wales has never really been a shy spokesperson by any means, but 99% of the visitors to Wikipedia were probably like, "Who the heck is this guy popping up on my screen and why does he want my money?" Turns out that the appeal for funds was actually the result of a collaborative process of volunteers, much like Wikipedia's own process for collaboratively producing and editing entries. The campaign raised $2 million in its first 4 days. It took 29 days to reach that number last year. Wikipedia's process is one that deserves some examination. It obviously works, in spite of all common sense. Wikipedia has not only redefined what an encyclopedia is, but by depending on a collective of writers and editors to try to achieve an unbiased account of human knowledge, they may have also redefined what knowledge itself is. Joseph Riegel has studied Wikipedia's process for some time, and he writes about it in a new book called Good Faith Collaboration: The Culture of Wikipedia. He recently sat down with David Weinberger to talk about how Wikipedia works.
Hello, Joseph. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, David.
So you gave a talk recently at the Berkman Center as part of the Tuesday luncheon series, and your slides for that were actually refreshing. There's just a series of great provocative quotations about Wikipedia. Your first was J.S.'s second law, which is, show me an admin who's never been called a Nazi, and I'll show you an admin who is not doing their job. So what is it about the cult of Nazism and Wikipedia administrators?
Nazism ended up having a number of occurrences in the tale that I tell in the book. And my main argument in the book is actually that Wikipedia's good faith collaborative culture has to resist the gravity of Godwin's law.
And if Mike Godwin.
Right.
And that law is?
That as the discussion continues, the likelihood of someone comparing another to Hitler or Nazis approaches one. And that was posed back in the Usenet days. And I argue Wikipedia has to counter that tendency of us to sometimes see the worst of one another in online contexts. And that particular law, I don't know if it's cognizant of Godwin's law, but nonetheless it shows how this issue of Nazis tends to kind of pop up. And that if you end up being very active on Wikipedia, particularly as an administrator, you probably are going to get in an argument with someone where it is certainly a possibility.
So just to be clear, what is a Wikipedia administrator, especially for people who have assumed that Wikipedia is all grassroots, all equal, all the time? What is the role of administrators?
So there's about 1,000 administrators, more or less, active. And they have access to a number of special powers or responsibilities, depending on how you want to interpret it. It's kind of controversial within the community to some extent. But basically, they have the ability to do things like block users and protect particular pages if those pages are the subject of a lot of edit warring or abuse or vandalism.
So an administrator is inevitably going to end up in a position of some conflict and thus be called a Nazi.
Right. If he blocks someone or if he protects a page and prevents people from editing it while he's acting like a dictator, like a Nazi, he's censoring people or she.
So one of the next ones in your slideshow is from WikiSpeak. What is WikiSpeak?
So WikiSpeak is a dictionary, an ironic glossary of sorts for people that aren't familiar with Wikipedia and the terms, or even if they are, a place where you can be humorous and sarcastic and sometimes snarky about the culture and how they interact with one another.
Snarkiness on the web, that's highly unusual. So the next slide you have is from WikiSpeak, and it defines Wiki as, and I'm quoting, of course, a model for the creation of enormous, diverse, and constantly updated online libraries of human behavior for the benefit of sociologists and social historians.
Wikipedia is of such interest to so many people in the popular discourse, but also amongst researchers and academics such as myself. And it's also interesting, one of the laws that all the researchers tend to use is the zeroth law, which is that while Wikipedia might very well work in practice, it could never work in theory. And journalists for a long time used that law, the zeroth law, to say, this thing Wikipedia is amazing and surprising, and how do we understand it? And now researchers use it to say, aha, I have a theory of how Wikipedia is working in theory, and I am as guilty of that as anyone else.
You are.
Yes.
Yeah. So, over time, unless it really does surpass human understanding, you would think that there would be some theoretical understanding of how Wikipedia works. But the what was getting in the way, I presume, and you'll tell me, was some wrong but seemingly obvious assumptions about how humans work together.
I think that's fair. The first big question was a question of motivation. Why would anyone in their right mind spend their time working online to do this sort of stuff? And a number of scholars came before me that reset the frame for looking at Wikipedia as a phenomenon, including Yochai Benkler, taking a more political economic approach, and then Clay Shirky most recently with his book Cognitive Surplus, that says this isn't necessarily work. You shouldn't compare Wikipedia contribution relative to people's paid jobs. You should compare it to the hours they spend sitting in front of the television. And so that allowed us to begin conceptualizing Wikipedia contribution a bit differently. You can approach it from a economic point of view, perhaps. You can look at the technology. It's incremental, it's modular, it's cumulative. But then I argue that the culture, the collaborative culture of Wikipedia is really important too.
Part of the Shirky cognitive surplus idea is a very, very few, relative to the amount of time that we spend watching TV as a culture, it's relatively tiny percentage of that amount of time was used to create Wikipedia. But that was also probably a lot of time for a tiny percentage of people. That's some tiny percentage of people. And in fact, the statistics that I've seen suggest that it is a tiny percentage of people who use Wikipedia actually contribute to it. So the cultural change that encourages people, allows people, gets them to work so hard on a collaborative project like this seems to maybe apply to a tiny percentage of people? Or do you think that this cultural change is indicative of a larger change among all the TV watchers, so to speak?
In terms of motivation and why people decide to edit Wikipedia, contribute to Wikipedia instead of watching TV, I do make some allusions to the long history of bibliophilia and bibliomania. I do think there is something, I call it encyclopedic impulse, about working on Wikipedia that makes it an sometimes almost obsessive task for some people. And I think part of that is you feel that you're making a tiny contribution to something that's huge. You know, you might fix a spelling mistake, but now you have contributed to one of the largest reference works in human history. Also, there are plenty of opportunities for you to be social, for you to make friends and enemies. And it's a little bit addictive, I think, in the incremental aspects, the thing you can tweak and tweak and tweak and tweak here, there, and all over the site.
Addictive for certain sorts of people.
Perhaps, yes. Not everyone. A lot of people talk about the long tail or the 80-20 rule. There are a few people that do a lot of work and a lot of people that do a little bit of work. And after motivation, that was kind of the second big research question that the research community was most interested in. Who is doing the work at Wikipedia and what sort of work that is? Anonymous contributors bring actually a lot of content into Wikipedia, but it's the hardcore Wikipedians who then massage that, who clean it up, who cite it, who reference it. And so that's just to say that even though there might be a lot of people doing a little bit of work and few people doing a lot, that's not to say one is more important than the other. They both complement each other.
So you do actually, in your slideshow, you a few times make references back to the original encyclopedist Diderot and his aims for an encyclopedia. To what extent is Wikipedia an achievement that Diderot would have liked, that the old encyclopedists would have applauded?
In the book, I try to trace a lineage. I trace Wikipedia's heritage back to the beginning of the 20th century, but I also touch back on Diderot. In terms of an aspiration, I think they definitely shared an aspiration of using technology to facilitate the division and transportation of knowledge around the world and maybe further global accord in that process. But if you go back and you look at people like H.G. Wells and Paul Otley and even some of the earlier internet encyclopedic projects, I don't know if anyone conceived of Wikipedia at the level of everyone is able to contribute and participate. I don't know how Diderot would have felt about that, but even people like H.G. Wells and Paul Otley, early 20th century documentalists, were really conceiving of contribution from technocrats, from scientific experts and the like. Even Wikipedia itself, as a progenitor of an earlier non-Wiki project, Newpedia, was a bit of an accident or a mistake. And not even Jimmy Wales and Larry Sanger, when they first started Newpedia, conceived that everyone would want to be able to contribute and could contribute something useful.
You're listening to Radio Berkman. There are now over 3 million articles in the English language Wikipedia alone. This is far more than you could ever expect to find in any hard copy, institutionally edited encyclopedia. David Weinberger asked Joseph Riegel whether those behind the world's first encyclopedias would be alarmed to see a compendium of knowledge that lacked such curatorial control.
For the earlier print-based encyclopedists, I wonder whether they would have looked at Wikipedia, because they did, as far as I understand, they did share the aim of providing a work that could be consulted by anybody and there would be knowledge. But there was a view of the encyclopedia, I believe, as this shrine to knowledge. And I just wonder whether they would have viewed Wikipedia as lacking dignity and giving up one of the cultural roles of the encyclopedist, which is to determine what is significant enough to be included in this shrine.
I think so. I mean, if we talk about universalism as a progressive and enlightenment sort of value, and we go back to the early 20th century and even the 19th century, their universalism was universal access to information. And I say that one of the ironies of Wikipedia and this pursuit of a universal encyclopedic vision was that the idea of a universal encyclopedia, which has existed for over 100 years, only became possible when that universalism extended to production. But again, going back 100 years ago, that's not what people were thinking about, most likely.
So actually, in your slideshow, you are heading towards at least what is featured in the title of your book. So here's one of your slides. This is from Diderot, and then there's a follow-up. All right, so this is a work, the encyclopedia, presumably, that cannot be completed except by a society of men of letters and skilled workmen, each working separately on his own part, but all bound together solely by their zeal for the best interests of the human race and a feeling of mutual goodwill. So no actual collaboration. You had to be assigned. You had to break it apart, right? And then the second part of the slide is, the best way to get people to assume good faith is to show it, which is Reik's second law, R-E-Y-K.
Right. So there again, I'm speaking to that aspiration of goodwill somehow being wed to the idea of a universal encyclopedia, knowledge for all. And I say those two things go hand in hand, because when I get to the core of the book, I say that the most important thing about Wikipedia collaboration and its culture is an open perspective about knowledge claims and an open perspective about other contributors. And sometimes these two ideas are actually wedded together in the notion of wiki love, which sounds a bit hippy-dippy, and probably is, and it's not as anything as formal as a policy at Wikipedia, but it very much captures this idea of we love information and knowledge, and we can best serve making that information and knowledge accessible by treating other people with kindness.
Which is different from the Diderot quote, where it's people are working individually, but they're engaged in this project because they love humanity so much and they love knowledge so much that they want to create this thing. Whereas that becomes a principle, the assumption of goodwill becomes a principle for the arguments that produce Wikipedia pages.
Right. At Wikipedia, you might have some beneficent optimism and hope and kindness with humanity at large, but you have to make that real concrete, and you actually have to feel that way about other people. There's a famous quotation, I don't know what it is, but it's something to the fact that I love humanity, but I hate people, or vice versa. I love some people, but I hate humanity. And Wikipedia actually forces you to be quite concrete, and because you're going to deal with real people who are sometimes a big pain in the ass.
So given that there are actual unresolvable differences among people of goodwill, and I'm going to say about everything, that there is no topic where you won't find genuine, heartfelt dispute. If it's true that those sorts of disputes are in fact irresolvable, how far does goodwill go, or the assumption of goodwill go? I mean, at some point, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose because there's only one wiki page on the topic.
So I liken my theory of the larger good faith collaborative culture to that of a puzzle, and I get to do that with a couple neat references. One is going back to H.G. Wells. He lamented the fact that there's this jigsaw of scattered and ineffective mental wealth throughout the world, and he wanted a world brain or world encyclopedia to bring it all together. And the Wikipedia logo today is an incomplete jigsaw puzzle. And so I say this, these two bits, the open perspective about knowledge claims and the open perspective about other people, we can think about in terms of that puzzle. And with respect to knowledge claims, that's as if you looked at the world and all these contested claims, for instance, is the world 4,000 years old or is the universe, 6 billion years old? Neutral point of view at Wikipedia, which says that we're not here to argue about what's right and wrong, what's true and false, but we're here to fairly and proportionally represent all claims that have been made via reliable references and sources that you can find. And so that means you can have two totally opposed theories about something. And if you can find some significant substantive person who has said it and you can cite it, you can say as much. And that means you can fit these disparate claims about the world together as puzzle pieces. Now, that doesn't mean working on a puzzle with other people is always an easier, fun thing to do, and that's where I say the open perspective about other people comes in. But I think neutral point of view is a big part of making it possible for people to disagree about what is true or what is right, but nonetheless document as well as they can an encyclopedic perspective on those things.
You present the WikiSpeak in your slides, the WikiSpeak definition of neutral point of view, NPOV, which is, as you say, I mean, it's the trumping value in a Wikipedia argument is, but is it neutral? Is that fair enough?
The way you put it, is it neutral, almost speaks to whether the claim that the encyclopedia or the article is neutral. And that's a fair way to understand it, because it's kind of a commonsensical understanding. But I say that that is actually one of the reasons why NPOV is so frequently misunderstood. But again, I argue that neutral point of view is not so much whether the endpoint, the encyclopedia artifact, is neutral, but are you taking a neutral point of view as a contributor with respect to the knowledge claims that are out there? So there's a corollary of neutral point of view called writing for the enemy. And it says that if you're doing a good job, you should be able to write about a theory or a belief that you don't hold yourself, such that a person reading that part of that article won't know which position you actually hold personally. So the neutral point of view is not so much about the object and the artifact. It's more about the stance contributors should be taking.
But with the, and again, correct me, but with the aim that if the contributors adopt that point of view, then the articles that result will be, well, will be what? Will be accurate, will be fair, will be neutral, will be objective, will be...
I don't think you can say it will be anything definitively. I think you could say it'll be more objective than had you not taken a neutral point of view stance. I mean, I include some quotations in the book, both from Larry Sanger's and Jimmy Wales, where they say all of these norms and aspirations and policies are ideals. We won't be able to achieve a perfectly neutral or objective encyclopedia, but if we do these things, we might get closer. And how far Wikipedia is from that goal line of being perfectly objective and fair and accurate, lots of people argue about that. But nonetheless, they say, and I agree, I think, that it's an important aspiration to have.
So one of the challenges to Wikipedia and to its process is that the process and the result work extremely well for a group that is ends up being self-selected. Creationists, for example, are represented in the evolution article, but they are represented as an alternative. The article favors evolution as the, I don't know how to put it, as the mainstream, as the, there's much more time spent on that. And likewise, the article on the history of aviation. The French version, at least, used to be very, very different. It's sort of same set of facts, but it's reversed. The Wright brothers are not the center of the story anymore, the way they are in the American English version of it. Wikipedia is able to succeed, and the discussions are able to go forward because those who very much disagree end up exiting the process. Is that true? Is it right? Is it a fair characterization, and does it affect the standing of any encyclopedia?
I think that is a fair characterization. I characterize this as the problem of proportion, because neutral point of view gets you kind of far by asking people not to argue about what is true and false. But nonetheless, there's still this question of proportion. How much of the evolution page should be dedicated to creationist objections? Depending on your perspective, it should dominate the page or it should be a little footnote. And how do you deal with that question? So then that gets into the verifiability policy. And so the claims that you represent on a Wikipedia article are supposed to come from verifiable sources, the best sources you can find. So that raises questions of consensus in the external community. Is there consensus in the scientific community that evolution is a dominant mechanism for speciation? And that is a more difficult process to adjudicate, and it can be gamed fairly easy as well. And there's lots of instances of people who feel that the proportionality is not fair. And so, for example, that led some people who don't like Wikipedia's alleged liberal bias, and definitely its materialistic bias, they left and
materialistic in the sense of non-spiritual.
Right. So they went to
money
the
rubbing.
Right, because
okay, well, go ahead.
I wouldn't say that, but I would say that, you know, the Bible is not a highly thought of source for making claims about the physical world at Wikipedia. It is not a trusted source with respect to that. They want refereed,
a bunch of godless atheists. That's what
yes, they want refereed articles from nature or science or whatever it might be. And so that led a number of people to go to Conservapedia, where they're much more comfortable with that sort of thing. And there are plenty of other sort of ideological forks of Wikipedia out there as well.
You're listening to Radio Berkman. A collaborative encyclopedia faces a considerably different obstacle when producing an article about the 2010 World Series compared to an entry on the origin of humankind. There are still an amazing number of viewpoints and heated arguments on all sides, which the process might not always be able to address. David asked Joseph if maybe a vision of multiple Wikipedias, say a Wikipedia, Conservapedia, Libopedia, Intellipedia, might be a better solution than a vision of just one pedia to rule them all.
Well, in terms of what people end up seeing, Wikipedia is the dominant encyclopedia, for better or for worse. I think it's for better, given the quality of some of these other encyclopedias and some of their points of view, which can be, some of them are racist, you know, they're like Aryan Nation neo-Nazi sort of encyclopedias. But in the end,
we're calling somebody a Nazi actually wouldn't be an objection.
Exactly. And I talk about that. That's how I open the book, actually, an argument about whether neo-Nazis should be able to participate at Wikipedia. But in the end, it's not something you can do anything about anyway. And I think appropriately so. This is an open content community. The content is licensed under a free open content license, and people can fork Wikipedia or create their own versions and compete against it. And I think that's quite appropriate and good.
The techniques that have emerged at Wikipedia, what I think are, I think you agree, an incredibly sophisticated set of practices and rules of thumb for enabling people who disagree to come as close to agreement as they're going to come. Do you see these as being far more widely useful outside of the realm of Wikipedia?
I do. One of the norms say how following these can be a great way to end disputes in real life. And since I've been following the Wikipedia for so long, I do find myself, when I look at a contentious issue and feel particularly partisan one way or the other myself, I think, well, how would I write this as a neutral undertaking? And that's actually an exercise I give to my students sometimes when we talk about Wikipedia in my conflict management class. I say, how would you write the biased, you know, paragraph on this topic, and how would you write the more neutral paragraph on this topic? But that said, funnily enough, I think these norms, and I published a paper this summer where I catalog and attempt to characterize over 100 norms that I think are germane to Wikipedian interaction, it's not as if they're brain science or rocket science. A lot of this stuff you learn in kindergarten and on the playground. So the reason I end up highlighting them is because I think it's important, and I also think sometimes pro-social behavior gets the short end of the stick, in that people tend to be very much interested in conflict and controversy, and there's plenty of that at Wikipedia, but pro-social norms are also quite important. And one of the ways I relate this, actually, Frans van der Waal is a famous primatologist who's been studying cooperation in primates, but some of it is relevant to humans as well, for a long time. And when he would write papers about, say, chimps or bonobos doing something that seemed nice, like mutual grooming, the peer reviews on his papers would come back and say, oh, you're completely anthropomorphizing. You shouldn't be saying anything like this. You don't know why they're doing this. But nonetheless, if he wrote about the primates fighting or being dominant, people had no problem with that. And so sometimes I think, for whatever reason, we don't notice or appreciate the more pro-social behaviors.
And yet, from another one of your slides, Wikipedia seems to, I guess, ironically or maybe tragically, I mean, just the topic of it, has over the past 10 years, over its history, has called forth some of the most, I don't know, extreme invective from responsible people. We're not talking about skinheads here. So you quote Michael Gorman, who was head of the American Library Association. A professor who encourages the use of Wikipedia is the intellectual equivalent of a dietitian who recommends a steady diet of Big Macs with everything. And that's not even near the extreme of the sorts of things.
No, there's worse.
There's the comparison to using Wikipedia is the equivalent of using a public restroom. You don't know who used the seat before you.
It's an orgy with partners you don't even know and don't know what you'll be taking home.
So it is either ironic or tragic that Wikipedia, with its sophisticated tools and techniques for allowing not just civil discourse, and not the sort of phony civil discourse where we agree to disagree and comment on how nice your tie is but still hate your guts, but actual civil discourse that aims at resolving well enough to get down on a page a difference that is of some importance. It's just, I guess it's irksome to me that it calls forth this sort of rhetoric.
Well, it was intriguing to me, and it motivated the last substantive chapter in the book. So I was thinking, why is it that something as innocuous as a reference work could generate this much ire, this much controversy? And when I started reading about the history of reference works, I realized Wikipedia was not alone. I mean, clearly, everyone knows that the French Encyclopedia was quite controversial in its time. But more interesting to me was the release of Webster's Third in the 1960s in America. They made some change, and there was a huge culture war, not quite as big as the one around Wikipedia, because nothing as big as Wikipedia, but it too received scathing criticism from people who said, we haven't even bothered to look at it. Jacques Barzun, however you say his name, I'm not quite sure, a very famous and well-known public intellectual, basically said that. We haven't even looked at it, but we think it sucks.
It can't possibly work.
Right.
In theory.
And I saw some remnants of that in my days as a child in school with the whole ain't a word controversy. That was the big thing with respect to Webster's Third. They thought ain't got too much of a nod about what is appropriate. And that raised the question of, well, are dictionaries supposed to be normative and tell us what is right and wrong? Or are they merely supposed to reflect what it is that people are doing? Are they supposed to be descriptive? So actually, I use a couple of these examples to say that reference works, Wikipedia included, are exemplars and proxies in larger cultural arguments about things that are changing. And so I think some of the heat directed towards Wikipedia is from a larger debate about Web 2.0 and the fact that some people hype Web 2.0 and the hive mind and collective intelligence, and other people think that's all a bunch of nonsense. And Wikipedia gets claimed by both as either a possible utopian being realized or a possible dystopia being realized.
So there was this very active argument when Wikipedia started for the first couple of years where simply about its utility. I mean, so there'd be a bunch of articles about all the mistakes in Wikipedia and all the things that weren't covered. And I have not studied this, so this is very impressionistic, but my sense has been that there's much less debate about whether Wikipedia overall is a useful and good thing to have, that it's a pretty good place to go look something up. In the big scheme of difficult articles, fine, but as in doing the core work of what we've used encyclopedias for, it seems to me there's less debate about that these days and more acceptance that lots of issues, but nevertheless, everybody uses it. It's pretty good.
I think that's a good assessment. And most of the debate today seems to be about how people should use it. And in particular, people aren't arguing about the quality of Wikipedia so much anymore. But most of the argument and a lot of the concern among Wikipedians is about what to do about defamation. So it's not so much as the chemistry article at Wikipedia, does it have a problem or two relative to other existing reference works, but there's a particular person and there's a bit of defamatory material in there or some slight in there, and should that be in there or not? And I think there was just a movie released recently called Truth in Numbers, and it's about the Wikipedia phenomena, and most people's readings on it is it's fairly critical. And a lot of the things they talked about in the movie was, are these biographies of particular people accurate or not? And in fact, all the talking heads they had in the movie, both advocates and critics of Wikipedia, when the credits were rolling, they gave these people their biographies and they were just paging through and saying whether they thought it was appropriate or not. So I don't think the question now so much is about the quality of Wikipedia, because I think it has improved, but the significance of Wikipedia. It is now the top return on any web search query you're likely to do, and particularly if it's about a person and it has something in there that's incorrect or defamatory, that has a big effect on that person's life potentially.
You show any living person any biography written in any medium with newspaper story about them or whatever, that person will feel embarrassed and ashamed and denounce it because they got it wrong and they didn't mention this or they spent too much time on that. They maybe look fat or they, you know, there is no possibility of pleasing people with any biography short of their obituary.
That's a good observation, actually. And that was the thing with quality. I mean, originally people began looking at Wikipedia quality absent some comparison relative to existing reference works. And I think that's a really good point with respect to most people are probably not going to be happy in any case. In fact, having this book come out, people write little blurbs about the book or they write little blurbs about me. And I frequently disagree. I would not agree with all the things that the endorsers or the preface writer of my book actually
wrote. Well, you wouldn't denounce them. That would be
no, I'm not going to denounce them, but I'm like,
take this opportunity.
I wouldn't have presented it that way. So, for example, a lot of people keep talking about me as a computer scientist. And yes, I have a computer science degree from a long time ago, but that was a long time ago. And I was not a practicing professional computer scientist. I did technical work. I did policy work. But like that is not how I see myself as a computer scientist. But that's how I'm described out there right now.
Yeah, I think that is a very widespread phenomenon. Joseph, thank you so much for this.
Thank you, David.
Joseph Riegel is a professor at New York University, a Berkman Fellow, and the author of the new book, Good Faith Collaboration, The Culture of Wikipedia. You can find links to Joseph's work and more on our blog, blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. You can also leave us a comment there or find us on Twitter at Radio Berkman. Also, there's a special blog-only bonus today. Zach Exley stopped by the Berkman Center to talk with David about his new gig as the Wikimedia Foundation's brand new Chief Community Officer. Check that out over on our show notes for today's episode. This week's episode was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, with David Weinberger at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.